It's traditional for someone else to preach at First Masses, although Father James took a risk in having me preach because I promised I wouldn't roast him too much. I had a different homily last night because Father James was not here. I was up at St. Michael's. But there's one story that I thought was funny. It occurred in the last 2 weeks. You know, the diocese, at least a package arrived for Father James, Reverend Mr. James. He was still a deacon then. And the I looked at it and I thought it was really funny. You'd think that his name is James Manuel Herrera. And the package came to Reverend Jesus Herrera. Jesus. So not only is he an altar Christus, but he got a promotion beyond anything that I've seen around here. So, sorry. You got to hear that story once more yet. So I have a lot more on him, but I'm going to pass. So does Father Kelly. You know, First Mass, it's something you never forget. It's after 8 years, in Father James' case, of preparing. It's a long process. And I remember a First Mass that I did was at Queen of Peace. And I had the sacramentary. I had my own. It had little cheat notes in it. It had all the ribbons and tabs just where I knew where they were. And the pastoral associate there, who is still there, took it away right before Mass and substituted one of her own. It had no tabs or ribbons. It was not the same one, not different company. And Father Pascal Chaling, who at that time taught Mass, was up there with me, and he couldn't figure it out either. So after 10 minutes of flipping around in there, somebody out in the congregation said this out loud, and this is not a joke. They said, "Didn't anybody teach him how to celebrate Mass?" So please don't say that to Father James today. I was so humiliated. All my relatives were there. Some of them never saw me celebrate Mass again. 16 years, I haven't looked at the video. I don't have the nerve. But after Mass, you know, after Father Pascal did the homily, and I got up to say a few words to try to damage control, you know. And I said, you know, I'll never forget the first time I did a sermon here as a seminarian. I said, the person was in the front row. They're all thinking, is it me? I said, yeah, it was the first person that ever fell asleep in one of my homilies. Bobbing up and down. But what was funny about that story was, after Mass, I'm greeting everybody. 5 people apologized for being that person. Good for humility. Something I think that applies to Father James, we've all been through this, is that about a week later, I was in L.A. doing a couple of Masses there where I'm from, and I stopped in my home parish. The pastor at this place, if you can believe this, his name was Monsignor Vatican. What a name for a priest. Monsignor Vatican. And he said to me, I told him I was just ordained, he says, well, you've had your moment of applause. You know, that's the biggest applause we'll ever get, I think, is at that ordination. And we haven't even done anything yet. But what's funny about it, he said, now you're going to assume your place serving the people of God as one of the anonymous black-suited men. And that's the way it should be, you know, because the focus is on Jesus, not on us. But it's interesting that after the ordination yesterday, coming out, it was a little bit long, so I had to rush back. Little did I know, I caught the end of the Rose Festival. All the derelict floats were going by. I parked on the other side of 405 because I spent the night up in Portland, and I had to wait 15 minutes while these floats went by. I thought, you know, it's kind of funny. The world outside in Portland was celebrating one thing, and we were celebrating another. But the world hit us very, very quickly as we left, you know. And it's poignant. The widow of Nain is also poignant. Jesus is in that area of the, you know, you've got Nain in the middle here. It means beautiful city. And up here you've got Nazareth and Capernaum and Mount Tabor. And so Jesus, this is his home area. And he's walking along with the disciples, and he runs into the equivalent of the Rose Festival, in a sense. There's a funeral procession going by. And Jesus is compelled by this sight. This is only in Luke, this story. And Jesus sees this widow. In that culture, if you lost your husband and you lost your only child, you were really in trouble. No one to support you. She'd be on charity of her family or friends for the rest of her life. She's caught up in her grief. And Jesus usually waits to be invited or to be asked, but he comes in because he sees that grief. She must have prayed to God for her son before he died, and she didn't get the answer she was looking for. She's focused on her son, on this burial. It was a coffin, but it was not enclosed. It would be like a stretcher. And each of them, one person on each handle, four of them. And Jesus sees this. Luke says it was a young man. He says it twice. And a widow. And it's a compelling story because all of humanity, in a sense, is passing by the Lord at that moment. And it's compelling because it's our story now. See how Luke pulls us in. How many of you have lost a child? I know there are quite a few here. Or a husband or a wife. We've been filled with grief. We ask God, where are you? You did not answer my prayers. Or why did this happen? We find that Jesus is still standing in front of Nain, if you will, the beautiful city. And he grieves with us. There's nothing that escapes him. No injustice, no sorrow, no joy. He's here with us today in this joyful day, and yesterday. He'd be with Father James in the low points of our lives, like all of you. It's not always pleasant. But Jesus is with us. He watches. And notice when he acts, it's at the end. He waits until he's an answer to her unspoken prayer. In the gospel, it's unspoken. He waits till this guy's dead. Like Lazarus. He waits until Lazarus is dead. When the boat is sinking, he waits until that boat is nearly under and they have to wake him. When Peter's drowning, he waits until Peter finally cries out, "Save me, Lord. I can't do this without you." Of course you can't, Peter. Neither can Father James. Neither can us. Neither can you. See his timing. God doesn't always answer our prayers in this life, but we can be certain that he is watching. Nothing escapes him in our lives. And the last thing I want to point out is when Jesus comes over, he says, "Do not weep." He says that to all of us. And he touches this guy. And instantly, he incurs ritual impurity. Notice how he puts the compassion above the law. Mother Teresa was once asked by somebody, "If you're praying before the Blessed Sacrament," which they did every day for hours, "and a poor person comes to the door, what should we do?" She said, "Well, I get up immediately to help the poor person because I'm just transferring Jesus' presence from one place to another." And this is what Jesus does. He incurs ritual impurity in order to take this on himself, as he will, as he still does. Of course, he raises him from the dead. And the man sits up and speaks. Imagine the moment. What did he say? We don't know. I often wonder at a funeral, if only the deceased could come back and speak to us. Of course, we'd all die immediately if they did. But wouldn't you like to hear what they have to say about their own lives? In this gospel, then, we know that Jesus is with us. And it's very valuable because when you who have been married or we who have been ordained, we have the applause. But then the long road, the salt mines of life come. And we may wonder, "Jesus, you were so present at this moment. Where are you now in this valley of tears?" He's watching. But there's a time for Jesus to intervene. There's a time when we have to suffer like he did to share something with him. We're proving our love for him. But he's there. He's watching. He's waiting. And we find at the end, when he explains it all to us, we'll say with the people of Nain, "Truly, God was here in our midst."